Welcome to this podcast in the Smart Science series by Adiseo.
Hello, this is Dr. Brian Sloan from Adiseo, here with Dr. Dan Locchini. We're visiting with Dr. Nancy Whitehouse from the University of New Hampshire. Nancy, during the 2021 annual meeting of the American Dairy Science Association, you were an invited speaker at one of the keynote sessions. You were asked to present the UNH plasma dose response technique. It has become recognized by many as the gold standard for precisely and accurately measuring the bioavailability of protected amino acids. Can you share with us how this technique came to be?
Yes, I can, Brian. I'd be glad to. The dose response technique, or the slope assay ratio, has been used in the pharmaceutical industry and in the monogastric vitamin amino acid research for years. In 2004, Rolquin and colleagues were the first to propose its use in determining the bioavailability of rumen-protected amino acids. In 2006, Dr. Schwab and I at the University of New Hampshire took what Rolquin had started it and developed it into the plasma-free dose response technique that we use today to evaluate amino acid supplements.
Can you share a bit more about the basic methodology of this technique that you've developed at the University of New Hampshire?
Be glad to. The high-producing lactating multiparous Holstein cows are what we use. We usually like them to be 90 days a milk or greater. They're usually fitted with rumen cannulas if we're going to do abomasal infusion of the unprotected or the control amino acid. They're Latin square experiments. They're 7-day periods. We have 4 days adjustment, 3 days for sampling. The rumen protected amino acid supplements are mixed in a proportion of the TMR 8 hours before feeding. This came about due to some work that was done at Miner Institute, where they showed that TMR does affect the integrity of these products. We will then put it into a fridge just so that we have a constant temperature, and so we're not dealing with temperature variations. The cows are fed every 8 hours. We milk them every 12 hours. Blood samples are collected the last 3 days of each period at 2, 4, 6, 8 hours after the morning feeding. We then composite those 4 samples together, so we have 1 sample per cow per day. We have done a research project here where we took blood samples for 3 days every 2 hours, and we determined that we did get steady state conditions with the plasma amino acid concentrations after that 4 days of adjustment. In the end, the days are usually averaged together, and then the means are determined by SAS, and we use those to develop the regression variables. And there I mean the slope, the standard errors, the R-squares, the confidence intervals, and the coefficient of variance.
It's obvious you have spent a lot of time thinking about and then putting together and evolving this technique. What advantages do you think it has over other techniques that have been used before?
Well, compared to the in vitro assays, and when we talk about in vitro, we mean they're all chemical, they're done in labs. The plasma-free dose technique considers the effects of mechanical mixing with the ration ingredients, along with the characteristics of the diet, such as pH and moisture. And because we do use animals, we use the effects of mastication and rumination are also considered, which are not considered in a lab-type situation. Compared to the in situ, once again, we're taking into the account those effects of mechanical mixing with the ration, time exposure to the diet, mastication, and rumination. But the really big important thing is we can use this technique on all products. That means fine or soluble products or liquid products, which you can't do with in situ type assays. When we compare to other in vivo assays, the amounts of amino acids we feed are in physiological ranges, unlike an area under the curve where it's such a high dose. Diets can either be adequate or deficient for the amino acid being studied. That's not true with some of the other assays that are used. We use very few calculations to determine the bio, bioavailability of the rumen-protected amino acid. It's basically, we just divide slope of one against the slope of the other. And as long as linearity can be shown for an amino acid to be studied, the plasma-free dose response technique can be used, unlike in other assays where it's only good for a methionine product.
Now, see, this is a really good technique that you guys were able to perfect. Obviously, the dose response technique relies on the slope rate ratio. Now, did I understand correctly that when sufficient replication is employed, the precision of the measurement is easily between plus minus 3 to 5 percent points? So, for example, if you have a well-known product like Smartamine M, you would expect each time that you experimentally test this product against post-luminal infused methionine, a bioavailability value between 77 and 83%. I mean, what is the secret?
The secret is a lot of hard work. One, you got to make sure that those rumen-protected amino acids are consumed by the cows, and that the infusion is infused within a 24-hour period, and that you're getting all that into the cows. This means infusion pumps are constantly checked and adjusted. Usually after the first 2 days of infusion, we have all the rep RPMs on the pumps figured out. And it means that for the rumen-protected amino acid, you got to give cows adequate time to eat that. Granted, we're only feeding them 1.5 kilograms of TMR, but you know, you got to give them a chance to eat it. And whatever isn't eaten is placed into the rumen via the rumen cannula. So if I say I'm feeding 24 grams of methionine from Smartamine M, they're getting 24 grams of methionine from Smartamine M. The other thing is getting that steady state with both infusion and rumen-protected amino acids. And when you're looking at methionine, you got to consider all the sulfur amino acids. Methionine influences all sulfur amino acids, and we have done work looking at different ways to calculate bioavailability, and calculating it as a percent of total sulfur amino acids as a percent of total amino acids minus total sulfurs decreases that standard error associated with the slope, which leads to smaller confidence intervals, which results in that plus or minus 3 to 5 percentage points.
Thank you, Nancy. And obviously, I mean, in spite that this the practicality of this technology, which is pretty simple, nothing is easy with ruminants. But obviously, you guys have perfected this system enough to be within that range, which is pretty amazing. Now, when you talk about steady state being achieved, why is this important and why?
The reason I feel it's important is, if you have not achieved that, the values you get each day you take samples are going to be different, okay? And that's going to affect your overall bioavailability of that product. So you really want to get that steady state so that when you're taking samples over those 3 days, you can determine outliers if you have to, because, you know, every so often things do go wrong and you have outliers. In this way, by having the steady state, you know that the amino acids are getting to where they need to be, and you can pick them up in the blood.
That's great, and I'm glad that you guys are doing this to assure that whatever values you are looking for are correct. Now, the other thing that you pointed out is that you pre-incubate these the products that you are testing for 8 hours before feeding. Why is that?
Well, the pre-incubation, once again, comes from the Minor Institute, which shows that exposure to TMR does affect integrity of rumen-protected amino acid products. The reason we use 8 hours, because we feed the cows every 8 hours. And so we're matching the exposure to how often we feed. If we were to go to feed every 12 hours, then the products would be in there for 12 hours. If we cut it down to feeding every 24, you know, once a day, we'd have it 24 hours. So the 8 hours is just arbitrary because that we feed 3 times a day.
Okay, but that's good that you are doing it to take into account whatever happens outside the cow. So you're covering all the aspect of it. This is absolutely great. Now, another question, Nancy, if you don't mind. Do you expect differences in the results if a positive control is infused into the blood or into the abomasum?
Yes, I would expect differences because the digestive tract does have requirements for amino acids, and that's getting the first shot at those amino acids. So the reason we infuse into the abomasum is because that is what is happening with the rumen-protected amino acid product. It's not being shot into the artery, it's being fed to the animals. So we want to subject the positive control and the rumen-protected amino acid to the same environment.
So essentially what you're trying to mimic exactly what's happening if the cows is just eating that stuff. That is also another good point. Why do you recommend to use the test nutrient, whatever amino acid that might be, in the basal diet to be deficient?
Well, this depends on which amino acid you're looking at. For a lysine, I actually recommend the diets be adequate in lysine and methionine because there's published work out there that shows linear response whether lysine is adequate or deficient. But for methionine, I do recommend the deficient diets because most published work is with deficient diets that show that linearity for methionine. We do have one study here at UNH where adequate diets were fed for methionine and we got linear responses, but you've also got to remember it's harder to maintain methionine adequate diet than it is to maintain a lysine adequate diet. And if you're looking at histidine, I also recommend a deficient diet just so you can see the other two metabolites that you need to consider when you look at histidine.
Perfect. Thank you, Nancy. That explained a lot to me now. Could you expect different responses based on the dry matter intake or stage of lactation of the cows?
I did a very extensive stats on this, looking at, we had 90 individual slopes for lysine and 87 individual slopes for methionine studies. And we showed that dry matter intake, days in milk, milk yield, fat, protein composition, and yield had no effect on the slope. And you've got to remember, it's the slope that determines the bioavailability. So anything that's going to affect the slope is going to affect that bioavailability.
Huh, 90, huh? That's probably you are the world most experienced person in terms of running these type of assays. this is something that's very good, Nancy. Thank you for doing this for us, for everybody. You indicated that you learned from these so many of these trials that you've done. What are the highlights of your batch experience? What have you learned?
Well, the thing that surprised me the most was that those animal variables and diet variables had such a small impact on the slope. When you look at the R-squares from them, most of them are 0.02. So that means that they are only accounting for 0.02 variability in the slope. Whereas if you look at the plasma concentrations for the highest dose of infused or fed rumen-protected amino acid that was used, that's where we have the highest impact on our slopes. And even those are not very high. For lysine, it's 0.32, and for methionine, it's 0.35. So everything we're doing really isn't affecting that slope. It is basically the cow telling us with her blood.
Perfect. Thank you, Nancy. And as a wrap-up, what conclusions did you share in your ADSA presentation, Nancy?
In the presentation, I concluded with the plasma-free dose response technique is robust, but it's simple. It's a method for providing accurate and reliable estimates of bioavailability of amino acids and rumen-protected amino acid supplements. And the refinements and improvements we have adapted over the last 15 years have reduced experimental variation. With this, we can increase the accuracy and precision of the plasma-free dose response method for determining relative bioavailability values for rumen-protected amino acid supplements.
Thank you, Nancy. That was a very complete overview of the invited presentation you gave at ADSA. I mean, what's really impressive, and I think we can't say that enough, is with the evolution of your methodology, how precise it has become in terms of being able to measure bioavailability of protected amino acids. With this said, Dan, what is important for our nutritionists and dairy farmers? How can they apply this great methodology, or at least the results of the measurements from this great methodology?
Well, Brian, what comes to mind to me are just two words: consistency and precision. I should add a third one: simplicity. But because due to the cow's digestive system, how it works, it is very difficult to determine these values. We all know that, right? So having a technique that renders the results within such a narrow margin give us the opportunity to fine-tune the amount of specific amino acids that needs to be added to the diet. The second thought that it comes to mind is that all rumen-protected amino acids shall be analyzed along the same protocol, using the same protocol, and to date, as much as we know, this is the one to adopt.
Yes, Dan, thank you for these comments. I just want to maybe re-emphasize one or two other comments, is that, yeah, because of the precision of the technique, the numbers generated bring great confidence to nutritionists whose goal is to amino acid balance rations for all the benefits we know amino acid balancing can bring. They want to be sure when they formulate with a given protected methionine or lysine product, the value they are using is accurate, so that they can use it to best cost rations and provide dairy producers with ration solutions that will optimize performance, health, and reproduction of their dairy herd, and ultimately the bottom line of their business. For those of you wanting to access in more detail Nancy's presentation, you can find that on addisale.com.
Thank you. This concludes the Smart Science Podcast by Addisale.